You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes.
Yeah, minutes. It's 90XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. There's plenty to talk about in the Australian technology scene at the moment. What with Sol Trujillo's $3 million pay rise, John Howard's free porn filters for all, and the sweet victory by ICE TV over the Nine Network in relation to Nine's outrageous allegation that it owned the copyright of its TV program guide. But first this week, I bet you didn't know that Sol Trujillo's salary is 38 times that of the Prime Minister of Australia. Yes, you heard me correctly. Mr. Trujillo's total pay packet increased by $3 million last financial year to $11.78 million, 38 times the Prime Minister's salary. John Howard said on radio last week that he wasn't complaining about the salary that he gets, but he did think the average Australian, who gets paid a lot less than he does, regards that sort of salary as being absolutely unreasonable. A sentiment that I wholeheartedly agree with, except one exception. I'd substitute the word unreasonable with obscene. As a shareholder, you really do have to ask if it's good value for money. Also this week, the free-to-air television networks are finally coming to a harsh reality that the way consumers get their news and entertainment is changing. The day of free-to-air TV's dominance in the marketplace is now no longer. Recently, the Seven Network announced a partnership with TiVo in an effort to provide commercial free TV to the masses, but at a cost. And this week, PBL's Nine Network lost a case over its alleged breach of copyright of its program guide. With the rollout of ADSL2 broadband in this country, albeit hindered by the likes of Telstra, Australians are turning to the new frontier for news and entertainment in ever-increasing numbers. We are already known as the great downloaders, thanks to the attitude of commercial networks, and this will only continue to grow in popularity as ADSL2, and maybe even fibre to the node, broadband, penetrates the Australian marketplace. There's one saving grace in the Australian broadcasting industry, though, and that's good old Auntie. The ABC is at the forefront of the information and entertainment revolution, actively pursuing online options. With a meagre budget of just $850 million a year for the whole organisation, Auntie manages to provide an exemplary example of just how to use the online world. Vodcasts, podcasts, and the live streaming of programs is just the start. So as the ABC embraces the future, the old school of commercial television seems set to follow the path of self-annihilation and become destined for a life of obscurity.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner joins us live in the studios to talk about living room convergence. Microsoft talks to Tech Talk Radio about Server 2008. We get the panel's reaction to Sol's $3 million pay rise. The election campaigning ramps up with John Howard's porn filter for all. And Coonan opens up the broadband race. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, ISPs say new government porn filters are unworkable, ICE TV wins EPG battle against Nine Network, Universal Music plays DRM hardball with Apple, demand for IT executives continues to fall, and Telstra announces growth in mobiles, broadband internet and census. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In the ever-changing Australian political landscape, prefacing a federal election later this year, the Prime Minister was joined by the Minister for Communications last week, announcing a $189 million program to protect Australian families from online danger. In a press release, Senator Coonan said the new program, NetAlert, was an ambitious initiative that would give families the tools they need to manage their internet experience, as well as tough new policing and enforcement measures. The comprehensive package will go live on Monday, the 20th of August. The package includes a filter scheme, either desktop or ISP-based, a new NetAlert website, filtering of all computers in public libraries, and a toll-free internet safety helpline. Internet service providers were quick to slam the government proposal as radical and unworkable, and some analysts noted that users who opt to switch on the filtering will be subjected to significantly reduced internet speeds. Steve Delby, Chief Regulatory Officer at Australian ISP iiNet, said filtering the internet at the ISP level instead of at home was unworkable and would affect the performance of the network quite significantly. Opposition communication spokesman Stephen Conroy accused the government of rehashing old announcements in an attempt to portray a tough stance on internet safety in the lead-up to the federal election. In what's been described as a David and Goliath battle played out before the federal court, the Nine Network last week lost its bid to retain control over programming content in ICE TV's Electronic Program Guide, or EPG. ICE TV's EPG is an online TV guide which can be used digitally by personal video recorders to start and stop recording of advertised free-to-air programs. The Nine Network claimed that ICE TV was breaching copyright by including program information in its EPG. Justice Annabel Bennett agreed that while Nine owned the copyright to its program guide, ICE TV was free to independently compile its own EPG and awarded costs against Nine for the legal action. ICE TV's general manager, Matt Kossatz, said the decision was a win for Aussie consumers who owned personal video recorders and digital media centres. In a blow to Apple's iTunes online music store, Universal Music Group, the largest music recording company in the world, has announced plans to trial sales of music without digital rights management. Universal has challenged Apple by offering DRM-free music through iTunes competitors for 99 US cents, the same price as its DRM music sells for on iTunes. The trial will involve download sites like Real Network's Rhapsody and Amazon.com, and will also be available from music retailers in the US, including Walmart and Best Buy. Analysts believe the announcement will cause Apple both anger and a degree of concern, as iPod owners for the first time will be able to choose between Universal's DRM music from iTunes or Universal's DRM-free music at the same price from an iTunes competitor. Demand for IT executives has fallen for the second month in a row, according to a monthly survey of the major top-end employment sectors. IT Wire reported last week that according to headhunting firm EL Consult, information technology demand was the one sector to fall in July, losing 3% compared with the previous month. The drop follows a similar fall in demand over June. Meanwhile, the finance, engineering, management and marketing sectors all experienced a growth in demand. EL Consult believes that the latest news, coupled with the performance of the IT jobs sector over the past 2 years, as well as rising interest rates, paints a bleak picture for the long-term IT executive employment outlook. And Telstra last week announced that revenues for the second half of the 2006-07 financial year were up nearly 4% to $24 billion, owing in no small part to growth in mobiles, broadband internet and directory service census. But Telstra CEO Sol Trujillo tempered the announcement by suggesting that next year might not be so good as the incumbent telco moved from a traditional telephony business to a media communications company. Telstra's earnings growth had been partially offset by declines in fixed-line services, dial-up internet and its New Zealand broadband business, Telstra Clear. Mobile revenue alone grew nearly 14% to $5.7 billion, reflecting continued customer growth and higher average revenue per user. Mobile services revenues grew by nearly 10%. Mr. Trujillo also noted that Telstra's 3G subscribers had now passed 2 million, with NextG customer numbers topping 1 million and outnumbering CDMA subscribers at the end of July. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
I've got a gripe here.
It's important to remember that when computer people talk about a bug, what they're meaning is a programming error as opposed to a virus, which is something completely different.
The problem was caused by your NVIDIA graphics driver.
Recommendations?
change graphics card.
Are you not real?
Telstra is alleging that the process by which the funding was increased and subsequently awarded to Opel was not fair.
It's monkeys in the cage.
Am I being cynical?
She got something thrown at her and she's thrown something back.
All this tit for tat stuff is just completely bizarre. Don't you find it? It's just odd. It's very strange.
3 billion songs.
Has there really been 3 billion songs written in the history of man?
Don't the finer you make the particles of toner, the higher quality the image.
Yes.
I've got a feeling Adam's going to have something to say about this.
Let's talk about Elton John. He wanted the internet shut down for 5 years to see how the production of music is
shut
affected.
Down.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Graham, my internet's broken. You say, oh, well, it's not broken. It's
Elton John shut it down.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week. Hello, everybody, and a very big welcome to a new station taking us for the very first time this week, which is 100.7 FM up in Highlands in central Victoria. So welcome to our new listeners through there. Joining us tonight on the panel, special night tonight, we've got Adam Turner joins us and Dr. Ron. Adam Turner live in the studio. Very good evening to you, Adam.
Yeah, thanks. It's good to be back here again.
That's good. More than welcome. And Dr. Ron.
Hello, hello. Yes, good to be back once again. Hello to all the Highlands people. That's tremendous.
Yeah, day off and all and you're late. I'm impressed with that. That's good.
I've got to go back to work for a holiday. Yeah, I've been frantic today. I've been battling with Front Page this afternoon.
Have you?
What a...
Front Page. Why are you going there? Front Page is a very old...
What a horrific
old
experiment.
I thought that had been banned under the Geneva Convention.
I think it has, Adam.
It's been banned by a lot of web-serving companies, that's for sure. The thing's called Front Page Extensions. I think it nukes your website, doesn't it?
Yes, after about 3 hours, I gave up and sold the customer a copy of Dreamweaver, so it's all good.
Oh, terrific. Okay, so technologically speaking, interesting week. We've moved. The Tech Talk Radio offices have moved from the city. We've just moved out of the city a bit. So today's been one of those days of...
You've had a very busy day.
Yes, I've been playing hide and seek with phone lines around the office. Nothing ever matches those customer records that the linings leave in the back of the cupboard there. So, anyway, no, it's been fun. How's your week been, Dr. Ron? Anything exciting?
Just busy, 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 busy. Same old, really.
Yeah.
But so going well. I had an interesting week talking to Microsoft. Now, they've had the TechEd conference up at the Gold Coast.
They have.
I'm very envious.
We're actually talking to Microsoft tonight on tonight's show.
Good, good, good. I had a chat to some people as well, Oscar Trimboli. You know Oscar, yeah, we'll be hearing from him sometime over the next few episodes, but you've been speaking to some people as well this weekend.
Yes, Julius Singvisicus, I think is how you pronounce it. I'm really sorry, Julius, if that's not how you pronounce your surname, but nonetheless, he's from Redmond in the United States, from the home of Microsoft, and we're going to have a brief chat about Windows Server 2008, the new beastie that they're going to unleash upon us come February, I think, 27th next year. So that should be good. Now, I've been saving the best question for last. Adam, how's your week been in tech this week?
Not too bad. I've been playing around with the satellite navigation thing today, and I thought I'd take it out of the box, not look at the instructions or anything, just tell it, right, I'm going to Tech Talk Radio. It wasn't quite that fancy. I had to tell it where the place was. And I got here beautifully until I realised that I'd remembered the wrong street. And so I drove up and down the street, and I thought, I've been here once before. This is not it. And so I had to turn to the old paper mailways to look at the map and went, yeah, that's right, that street over there. So it doesn't matter how good the technology is. If you screw up the address, you're going back to the paper.
Isn't that always the way, though? You know, the best laid plans, and then all of a sudden, if you get one digit wrong, it's like typing an email, isn't it? You know, that one typo will just shoot you down in flames.
But up until that point, I was very impressed with it.
Were you? They obviously weren't going that fast because, you know, they sort of need a bit of distance to actually tell you when to turn right and turn left.
Was pretty good, actually. Yeah. It was telling me the names of the streets. I've never tested one before that would tell me the names of the streets.
What sort of accent was it?
A bit of an American sort of an accent, but okay. you live with that. But at least it was telling me the other ones would just be turn left and then be two left, like close to each other. I was like, what do I do? This one was actually telling me street names. So.
Yeah. Does it get potentially aggressive as you get closer to the turn and you don't turn?
No, I actually think it's pretty smart because when I realised that I was at the wrong place and was going up and down and started swearing and stuff, I didn't hear a word from it after that.
Oh, good.
I think I figured out that something had gone terribly wrong and it just decided for its own safety to shut up and sit in the corner.
It's investing in its own welfare.
Yes, it's
longevity.
Or I'm not going, because in a survival mode. Yeah.
dear. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is our email address. A very good evening to Jeff Dudley, who says, everyone's working on the streams tonight, so that's good. So who knows where we might get some listeners from this evening. We have some new listeners in central Victoria. And if you'd like to participate, feel free. We've got many ways to do that. You can ring us on our
Feedback number 1300 664 882. You leave a message there and you'll hear yourself on the radio. The other way is at the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, which is where you can come and contribute and ask questions and do all sorts of things with other like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners. And of course, you want to talk to us while we're live on air. If you're listening to us live on air, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au, or to bypass the spam filter, on air at techtalkradio.com.au.
That's the secret email address. We don't have that on the internet.
No, we don't put that anywhere on the internet.
So we only get messages at that address from people who have listened to the show, which is always good.
Are you sure there's no spam filter on that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Oh, I have logged in.
I had problems getting through the other week.
Did it? Okay, we'll double check, but I'm pretty sure there's no spam filter on there. But
it just
for that very
like
reason.
Me.
Doesn't it? We used the form. We got a form on the thing. That always gets through. So give that a bit of a whirl. Okay, let's kick off tonight. As you probably heard in my opener, who gets paid 38 times more than the current Prime Minister of Australia?
You do.
No,
I wish. You wish you do.
I wish. Yes, Sol Trujillo's current pay packet, $11.78 million a year. That's not bad, really. What would you do? You wouldn't know what to do with it all, surely.
He'd have a lot of schmoozy lunches.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah.
Well, he lives down there. He can listen to us live, actually, because he lives in... was it Freshwater Tower down there in Docklands?
I wonder who his ISP is. Do you reckon he's got a bigpond.com address?
He can afford to pay the excess data charge.
Yeah, well, couldn't he? Yes.
See, but people who are silly enough to be with Telstra, their excess data charges are paying his $11 million. So you know where your money's going now.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because we were listening to them saying, oh, yes, they did their profit and speculation thing during the course of the week. 66% increase in revenue from broadband. Now, that's not bad because, you know, they meter their uploads and everyone's just signed up with Telstra because they can.
Where's that coming from? I'd be interested to know how much of that is excess data.
Well, speaking of that, was it Margaret? My friend Margaret.
Yeah. She's put $50 into his pay packet the other week.
Has she?
Yeah.
How did she go with her Trojans and stuff?
Oh, we seem to have got it all sorted out. I was watching her uploads and it stopped after that. Stopped after that. So whatever it was, we nuked it.
Fantastic. And officially, thank you very much for your view from the couch. It's been absolutely lovely. You got a view from the studio tonight. I hope it's just as impressive.
I was going to say, I'll rant on about Ice TV later, and you can just cut out that 5 minutes and put it up on its own and call it a view from the couch.
That'd be good.
A view from the office chair.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it? Anyway, back on track, John Howard, he's actually going to, you know, because we've got an election coming up, internet porn's back on the agenda again, and he's decided to... I don't know, how would you say, it's a package, which a filtering system, a CD, which is going to be given out to all those people who don't know how to, do it on your own computer, I guess, really, isn't it?
This was in the news. This is the new Net Alert initiative that was announced by the government last week.
Yep, and this is what he had to say.
The government is also partnering with internet service providers to enable them to make available the option of a filtered internet service to those families who want this option instead of home computer-based filters.
So instead of home computer-based filters, you get this option. Do you reckon...
Does it mean it's filtered at the ISP level?
Well, it can be either. My understanding is that the new system... Well, part of the new initiative, they're going to have a NetAlert website. You can download security software to run on your desktop. Or they're going to mandate that ISPs must be able to provide an ISP-based filtering system as well, if that's what you want to use.
Which is insane to use a technical term.
Well, it is. He was absolutely slammed by the industry last week, wasn't he? They just said it's completely unworkable, and we know you're trying to win an election, Johnny, but what are you thinking?
He's trying to win the old lady vote.
Well,
these people have got no idea about the technology. He must be a good guy because he's trying to stop porn.
Can I put my cynical hat on again?
Certainly.
He lectured the
taking it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, too right. He lectured the churchgoers the other day. So I wonder if this is just a flow on from that. I'm gonna get up there and I'm gonna say we're gonna stop porn, and all of everyone's gone, yes, John. Yes, yeah, like the American elections. I
did a nice bit of gay bashing the other day as well because he knew it would win him some votes.
Oh my goodness me. Peter Koronis is the chief executive of the Internet Industry Association of Australia. This was his reaction to John Howard's news.
If we were to move to a system where all ISPs were required to filter the entire internet before it went to their customers, then I think that would have significant performance degradation effects on the network. And so the challenge now is to understand what is being proposed here, and indeed the government has permitted industry to conduct its own feasibility study to determine the best way in which a selective form of optional ISP filtering might be provided. I think that's the way in which this scheme has been envisaged to operate, so that it becomes an alternative for, as I say, a minority of users that feel that they haven't got the wherewithal to put a CD-ROM in the drive and install a program, or download a program and install it on their computer.
I reckon we should slow the internet down. Elton John would like that, don't you agree?
Elton John's got the right idea. Just turn it off for a few years.
That'd fix all the problems, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just kill it.
So, yes, yeah, they were talking about doing it at an ISP level, but that would, I don't know, that'd bring your megabits per second down hugely. Or the response time, you go, give me, you know, newspaperxyz.com.au, and you can go get a coffee while it just checks that there's no rude words or funny pictures or anything like that inside.
It would work anyway.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
All the software I've ever looked at hasn't been very good anyway, especially stuff that tries to do it on the fly. The only ones I've seen that were close to good were the ones that had a blacklist maintained by someone else, and then it would check the site against the list. But anything that's trying to scan a site on the fly, A, is very slow, and B, is very hit and miss.
But those lists move and the sites move,
yeah,
because
exactly.
As soon as one disappears, another one comes up. So words is not really something that you can go off and search for. URLs or site addresses are nothing that you can come up with. It needs to be sort of some form of proactive. You know, everyone needs to click a button. Oh, here's a nasty site. Just think, you could take the ABC down. If someone doesn't like the ABC, you click that button and oh, everyone loses the ABC.
Some of the spam things. You report someone because you call them a spammer, and then that poor person has to prove to a spam house, I think it is, that they're not a spammer.
Yes, no, there's a bit of that around.
Mm.
So, and of course, because we're in an election year, we don't want to be biased or anything like that. Stephen Conroy came out. He's the, he's not really the communications person. What do you call him? He's the finance minister or something like that, isn't he, Dr. Ron? You know,
he's the opposition communications.
He is. Person. Is that his title now? Is it?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. No. Okay. He came out. This is Senator Coonan's person sits opposite him on the park bench. He had this to say.
And what the Prime Minister has done is a very watered-down version of Labor's plan. He's just trying to play catch-up less than 100 days before he has to call an election. So he wants to look like he's tough on net porn, but if he wants to be really tough, he should adopt Labor's plan to have a mandatory clean feed that will block designated sites from actually being transmitted to people's homes.
I hear where he's coming from, but this is what we're saying. You can't block feeds. It's just it's just not an impossible. So, you know,
you've got to tie the tubes of the internet.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know who's advising these people. I find it exceptionally frustrating where...
PR people and not technology people.
Are they? Is that where Senator Cooner's getting...
People.
Hey, by the way, Senator Cooner's press releases are getting a lot longer as we get closer to the election. Have you noticed that, Dr.
Yeah, they're coming thick and fast, too, at the moment.
They are indeed. She had a few more come through today, too, which I've got buried here somewhere on the bench. But anyway, that's the end of Mr. Howard's so-called electioneering, I guess, on spam porn things, because you just can't get rid of it in your email, it's on your pop-ups, all that sort of stuff. But
we'll revisit this in a couple of weeks. Mr. Howard has given a release date. I think it's in 2 weeks from today.
Has he?
So, yeah, so I take it that will be the date that he will have the NetAlert website up and running and the client application available to be downloaded and installed on your computers. I doubt somewhat that every ISP in Australia is going to be filtering everything in 2 weeks' time, just based on this announcement the other day. So we'll revisit it in 2 weeks, see what the state of play is.
It'll be fun to test the software.
It will. We'll put it through the hoops, won't we?
Yeah. So I've only had one piece of software. Zone Alarm 7 is the only thing that I've thrown 20 random porn sites at, and it's actually picked them all up.
Really?
Everything else I've ever used has been useless. Maybe 2-3 sites and you get through. Or it'll block half a site, but still leave the links there, and they're not very good.
Or blocks the images, but the text still
comes
through.
About half the images, and then the text gets through, and then it's like it makes it up as it goes along.
Yeah.
I dread the day that I have to explain to my young girls that they've arrived on a site which is a bit untoward or something like that. What's that, Daddy? Oh, dear. Mm. Ask your mother. After all, she knows.
just go to NetAlert, install that software.
Yeah exactly. Mm. But I think when I tackle the process, I'll be, fortunately, because of my knowledge and what I can do with servers, it'll be a little bit easier. We'll have a whitelist, which is an allowable list for kids to actually go and look at.
That's what I'm thinking I'll do when my kids are old enough to be doing that too.
Yeah, you can go to abc.net.au, you can go to all the
good sites where, you know, you can play, but that's basically it. So.
And for young children, it'd be pretty easy to put together a list like that, because there are only maybe a dozen or so sites that you're going to want them to visit, like, as you say, ABC Kids,
and
news sites, things like
and
that.
And you go to your kids and you say, this, if they come to you and say, Daddy, I want to go to this site, I want to go to, you know, the Sony PlayStation site, and you go, well, why? You know, mm-hmm. if you think it's not right, then you
Let's
can do
go
it.
Down again and have a look at
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And if it's okay, add it to your list.
Mm. Now, speaking of going to interesting sites, I went to the ICE TV site just before, and there's a lovely image there saying, we won, we won.
Paper Beach Rock.
Paper Beach Rock, yes, yeah. exactly. Adam, this is one of your, let's just say you get a bit under the collar with all this sort of stuff. Firstly, tell everybody what ICE TV does, and then tell me about the how they managed to be the Samson and Goliath type sort of battle, and they came out and won.
ICE TV provides an electronic program guide, and what that is it's a list of what's on every TV station for the next 7 days.
Now, does this work right around the countryside?
Yeah, because they compile different ones for each viewing area. So
for regional,
you tell it where you live.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of like the listing in the paper. When if you live in Melbourne, you look in the Green Guide and it says, right, this is what's on at each time.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is that this is in electronic form that you can download to your digital video recorder, so not your old VCR, but if you've got one of these new video recorders with a hard drive in it, you can download it to that, and then it can read the TV guide, and so you tell it, right, I want to take Lost every week, and so it goes, okay, Lost is on whatever night, I don't know, I download these things, I don't watch them on TV, but Lost is on, you know, Wednesday night or whatever, okay, I better take
it. But isn't that the whole idea behind it? You don't need to know when it's on, you just say, I want to record
the
program.
Yeah, that is the way, depending on which service it's on, yeah, you just say, I want to record Lost, and then it will, every day it'll read the TV guide and go, oh, Lost is on tonight, okay, I better take that. Now, the reason why people like Nine and the others don't like it is because these people use these with digital video recorders, and digital video recorders make it easy to skip ads. Now, ICE TV does not let you skip ads. I'm sick of the number of stories I've read online that says it does.
Only the TV does, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, but all ICE TV is a TV guide. It's the device that you're using, whether it's a TV or a computer or whatever. That's the device that does the recording. That's the device that does the ad skipping. It's not ICE TV's fault that people skip ads, but rather than attack the devices, it's easier to attack ICE TV. And mm-hmm. so that's what Nine decided to do. So what Nine said is, actually, we have copyright over the TV guide. It's ours. You're not allowed to copy it. We're taking you to court. And they did it a couple of days before ICE was going to float on the Australian Stock Exchange. And so the float was totally ruined, and they had to give back all the investors their checks, and it really did a lot of damage to the company, the way mm-hmm. The way that Nine timed their legal challenge.
Okay.
So that's been hanging over ICE TV's head for about the last 8 or 9 months. So they're trying to expand their business. They're trying to get other set-top box makers to make their devices ICE TV compatible, but they've got this lawsuit from Nine hanging over their head. Now, last Friday morning, the Justice Annabelle came back and gave her a ruling and basically said, okay, Channel 9 does have copyright over their TV guide as a whole, like as an entire document, but they don't have copyright over every little factoid within that guide. Now, ICE TV are not copying Nine's guide. ICE TV are writing their own guide of Nine, so they're allowed to do that. So it's not open slather for everybody. It doesn't mean you can just go out and copy Nine's guide word for word.
No, but if they compile their own guide and do their own research and put it together themselves, then anybody can do
and
that.
And they proved in court that that's what they do, and they have a process. And when there was first problems with this, they said to all the networks, come in and we'll show you how we do it. Everyone accepted except for Nine.
Yeah.
Nine said, no, we're just going to sue you. Because Seven made a bit of noise as well, but then when I showed them how they did it, Seven said, okay, fair enough. We can say you're not copying what we do. You're compiling your own. And so Nine is now going to face damages, and the judge said that ICE TV is entitled to sue for unjustified copyright threats or something like that. So I'm sure that the scuttled float will come up in conversation when ICE TV are talking about how much they need to be compensated for their troubles.
Is the ICE TV EPG, is that a subscription service?
Yes, it is a subscription service. They have, I think it's a 14-day free trial so you can play around with it, and then it's about $99 a year, so that's $2 a week. but it's not just the TV Guide. They have other services as well. You can go into their website.
ISTV.com.au. I'm looking at it right now, actually.
You can go into their website and say, click, I want to tape Lost. I want to record Lost. Sorry, you can't say tape anymore.
Yep.
And it will send a message to your digital recorder at home saying, record Lost.
So you need to be, you need to have it connected to the internet, don't you?
It needs to be connected to the internet because it downloads the TV Guide
yep.
from the internet. There are other, some of the top field boxes don't have internet access, and so what you do is you download it to a USB stick and then you move it across. But ICTV have said they're not going to support devices anymore, any new devices that don't have Ethernet, because ICTV have got all these new services coming out. They want to do video on demand. They want to do some social networking sort of things where it compiles a list of who's recording what. And it doesn't say, oh, Dr. Ron's taping Lost, but it says the most popular show being recorded this week is Lost. And then you can leave your comments, and so it becomes a whole social thing.
It's going to be a little bit more accurate, I guess, than the traditional rating system that we used to have too, really, in a lot of respects.
That's another reason why the networks would be afraid of it.
There's a lot of devices out there which actually use this technology, or the ICTV technology. There's from Media Center software and Xbox 360s through to Mac Media Centers. But the personal video recorders, which I think are probably going to be the main thing, like the BeyondWiz DPS-1. I think I saw that in one of the big white goods companies the other day for about $1,500. That looks like an absolute...
Mums and dad stuff. It's not mums and dad stuff, though. You've got your Top Fields, which are up around a grand. You've got your BeyondWiz, which is up around $1,500. I think Digitech... Oh, there's one or two smaller players who have some cheap ones, but your Sonys and your LGs and all that kind of stuff that you'll buy down at Harvey Norman, none of them are compatible with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they can extract a seven-day guide from the broadcast signal. If you've got digital television, you'll see that when you call up on the screen, it tells you the name of the show that's on now and the name of the show that's on next, but that's all you're told. Some regions you get a little bit more than that. The networks have the ability to send 7 days' worth of information down there, but they refuse to do it. Now, they made an agreement a couple of months ago, and I did a view from the couch on this, with that they were going to start doing that, but they were going to encrypt it in such a way that it wouldn't be compatible with existing devices, because the set-top box manufacturers are going to have to go out and add encryption and a back channel to their boxes, which means, A, encryption, because they're going to encode this information in a way that so not everyone can read it, but also a back channel so they can see what you're watching. It'd probably be a TV.
Brother, here we go.
And this is what a Foxtel box... I didn't know. My dad's got Optus Pay TV, and when I helped him...
So Foxtel know what you watch?
Well... My dad's got Fox Optus, and Optus and Foxtel are kind of the same thing.
Same thing.
And when I helped him, when he bought his hard drive recorder, and I connected it all up for him, I found that there's a new phone port behind the television that wasn't there before, and the Optus box is connected up to it.
And my dad said,
oh, yeah, I can't remember the guy asking me if it was all right to do that. If that thing can dial home, it's telling them everything.
Yeah.
You know? I wouldn't sit in front of the television naked eating, you know what I mean? Because you don't know what this thing is reporting back.
Anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Right there.
Now, my mum and dad have had Optus as well. Now, I'm trying to think. They've got a Foxtel box now because they had a fault, and the bloke in the miscellaneous no-name white van came out and just dropped the new Foxtel box in there, I think. And same thing, I noticed, I think mum or dad asked me, they rang me up and said, this guy wants to put a phone socket in. You know a little bit about telephones, don't you? Why would they want to do that? I went, no, he doesn't have to do that to watch, you don't have to do that to watch television.
Yeah.
But I didn't know this.
Yeah, but the box does have an Ethernet port on the back. Oh, there's an IQ.
They haven't got an IQ. The IQ might have an Ethernet port.
Yeah, I think it does.
But it's not there for your benefit.
No, absolutely, yeah. And there's a whole, there's always... diatribe on the internet about, you know, can you unlock it, can you make the Ethernet port useful so you can do things remotely to make the machine record stuff. And
I bet you there's nothing in their terms and conditions.
No, that's
I bet you there's nothing in their terms and conditions about privacy.
Oh, yeah, there would be a little thing buried right down the bottom that says we can do whatever we want, stiff.
But that's a bit random.
On page 42 somewhere.
But that's how Austam works. When they do their ratings and stuff, the little box you get which gets plugged into your television set actually rings a 1-800 number in the middle of the night and downloads all the information about what you've been watching.
That's what this is doing. I'd love to look at my parents' phone bill.
Be good. Also, just look at the terms and conditions and what they're signed. Now, the thing with the ratings, though, Andrew, is that you're actually part of the group and you're aware of it and you know that you're taking part in a ratings program. But these things are being deployed, well, not by stealth, but they're not advertising.
Well, it's like those click things, do you accept these conditions? And you just go, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, my dad, they said, you need a TV thing, you need a phone socket, Dad. Yeah, whatever. like, okay, I want it, you're going to have to do it.
Hang on a minute. Why do I need a telephone?
I'd like to know what happens if you disconnect it. Will it stop working?
So I think all of our listeners need to go behind their set-top boxes now, especially if you've got a Foxtel box, and see if you're plugged into the telephone jack, and remove it.
Well, I didn't say that. I didn't recommend. Don't come back to me when it doesn't. When something goes wrong, I didn't recommend that. Paranoid, but I'm not crazy.
All right. So, getting back to the ice scenario.
The way around. No, sorry. Go on. A bit of both. A little bit from column A. A little bit from column B.
Recently, we had Free TV Australia announcing their new Whiz Bang proprietary format or similar.
Yeah, because they thought that ICE would lose and then they'd have the EPG
well, that was
market
my question.
Locked up. They thought, right, Nine's going to take ICE out of the equation. No one else will be allowed to do this. We'll have it all locked up. We'll do it the way we want. We'll let it work with TiVo, and which TiVo's going to have the ad skipping disabled in Australia. We'll only let it work with our special boxes that we like. There'll be things with ad skipping disabled, so they'll have a frank exchange of ideas with LG for a start. And they thought they had it all locked in. And now that ICE has won, it's actually opened the door for ICE and even others. Like Foxtel and Seven have been fighting about sharing EPGs with each other. But now that ICE TV has won, it's possible that they could just go out and compile their own, as long as they do it the right way, without the permission of the other party. So, yeah, the ICE TV case was meant to knock everyone else out of the picture and lock it all down, and now that ICE has won, it's sort of screwed it up for them.
So Free TV jumped the gun a little bit, did they? Obviously. If they were going to come along and do this, or are we going to now have an NTSC and PAL version of it?
They had to announce that was to go with TiVo. TiVo was useless without an EPG.
Mm-hmm.
So that
will TiVo that, run with ICE on it? With the ICE EPG or not?
Not a one from Seven, I can bet you that. You might be able to hack one, because a lot of people in Australia have TiVos because they import them from overseas, change the tuners, hack them to work in Australia. But if you've got one from Seven, it'll be locked down very tight.
I could imagine. All right. There's the latest and greatest on what's going on around town in the ICE TV battle and the digital free-to-air sort of stuff. I guess there's still plenty of time before all these gadgets roll out too, so we'll still see. I know. Are Nine going to appeal this? Do you know?
I'm not sure, actually. That was something I was waiting to hear about and didn't hear back on. Because I spoke to Nine on Thursday and they said no comment because the full findings weren't going to be released until Friday because the lawyers had to go through and pick out anything that they didn't want other people to know.
All right.
And so Nine said, okay, no comment until they release it tomorrow, and even then probably still no comment. And then I've been busy. I haven't got around to getting back to them.
All right. So it's going to be confusing. I don't know what I'd do now. I'd sit on the fence until things start becoming available commercially, I guess, really, don't you? So, although ICE is available now. I've never used it. Do you use it at home?
Yeah, because I built a media center box a couple of months ago for a magazine.
Which video card are you using, by the way?
I'm actually just getting a new ATI 2600 turned up today. I haven't put it in yet.
Video.
I built it for a there's an Australian magazine called Atomic, and the issue that's out now has got the first half of my How to Build a Media Center Box article in it. So I built it for that. And then I decided if I liked it, I was going to use the money I got from the story to buy the parts. And I've decided I like it. So I'm in the process of actually buying the bits and making it mine. And so I subscribed to ICE TV because that's the whole point.
It is. All right, that's good. My NVIDIA card's causing blue screens on my Windows XP box, which that's another story because I got the blue screen of death on an XP machine last week.
You don't see that very often.
Exactly. And I thought when it recovered and rebooted and came back up, it says, do you want to tell Microsoft about this problem? I've gone, oh, what the heck?
Yeah.
And it's come back and said, your blue screen was caused by NVIDIA.
I've never clicked yes to one of those things.
Well, you should try it.
Guy.
No, you should try it. It's a bit of a laugh, actually, because sometimes I actually come back with some valuable information and you go, oh, it's my video card that caused that. Thank you very much. Now, we're going to talk about broadband a little bit when we come back after the break. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Ron. Adam Turner's in and joining us this evening. My good self, Andrew McComb.
Andrew McComb.
Okay, I just got some spam from some Arabic country. I couldn't read it. It was lovely pictures, though.
Dr. Ron.
But it shouldn't be at all, you should just click on something and get your song.
Graham Callaghan.
Do you routinely take the covers off new devices just to see what's inside them?
Mark Diggins.
It's a bit of a shame it's come to this because you shouldn't have to have identification to make a phone call.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're going to read the letter?
I can.
Oh, do you want me to read?
Oh, okay.
Glad we're all organised.
We did have a production meeting this evening.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. On the panel this evening, Dr. Ron, Adam Turner, and look, it's Andrew McComb. We're going to have a bit of a chat now, I think, about broadband. There's been a bit of broadband news around this week. Not too much, and we won't bore everyone silly. We get letters and all. Telstra talks with Labor at the moment. So they're thinking about moving their ideas across to see Mr. Stephen Conroy. The informal talks are in contrast to the breakdown in the relationship with the Howard government and Communications Minister Helen Coonan. Now, I don't know, have you heard any more about Telstra suing Senator Coonan? Anybody in the studio or anything like that?
No. Is there a breakdown?
Well,
Oh, dear.
Who would have known? They were such good friends.
Sorry?
No, it was me, but keep it up.
I was going to say, Telstra Chief Soltra here refused to comment on yesterday Labor's broadband policy, which, having heard what Mr. Conroy said tonight about the spam filter things, I'm not 100% sure whether he's being advised in the right way in relation to broadband in this country. But nonetheless, I guess the bottom line is we need the speed, and it'd be really nice to have something like fibre to the node being brought out in most of the civilised centres, I guess. If you live a bit further afield out in the sticks, then you've got the wireless stuff next year, I'd be guessing. So,
Telstra are watching the polls, sorry, just like everybody else, and they know that chances are they're going to be dealing with Labor in next year. So they've got to make friends with them now. They've got to say, hey, what's going on? Because, I still think John Howard's going to pull something out of the hat, not because I like him, not because I want him to, just because he's a very good politician.
He's very shrewd.
Shrewd's the nicest word I can think of, actually, shrewd. So you'd be crazy to write him off, because he's been at least this far, if not further behind before, and managed to pull a rabbit out of the hat. But Telstra, they've got to look long-term. Telstra are going to be here after the next election, no matter who wins. So, they've got to have a foot in each camp.
It's interesting, really, isn't it? Because Phil Burgess came out last week. He's lodged he started his own war against terror at the moment, which was quite interesting.
I saw an ad in today's paper, I think. It was a thing of Telstra and Optus, and it had, like, the Singapore flag behind the Optus one and the Australian flag behind the Telstra one, and was, make sure you see where your money and your jobs go and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it? Tit for tat. Coonan opens up the broadband race. The federal government is poised to unveil the guidelines for the timetable for the $5 billion plus residential broadband rollout that has been the centre of escalating disputes with Telstra. I thought the guidelines would have been out by now, surely. What are these guys quoting on, after all? The process, which will be revealed as early as probably maybe this week, is expected to run beyond the federal election, helping to neuter broadband as an election issue. Oh, yeah. I'll have to see that go away.
Up in about 8 weeks yet, or 10 weeks or something. Plenty of time.
Yeah. Interested parties have been given an initial period of 30 days for comment on the draft guidelines. So, both Telstra and rival Optus-led group known as the G9 have released some details of their plans, but the government is hoping to attract wider participation. Who else is going to participate? Telstra and sort of a large consortium like Optus are probably the only guys who can participate, unless they're going to try and bring some foreign investors into the country.
Well, Coonan put out a press release the day after that news story that basically said they're looking for submissions on the draft guidelines, and they're looking for close of business on Wednesday the 29th of August. And then industry will have 4 months to develop their proposals. So that's end of September, end of October, end of November, end of December. So almost definitely past the election.
Yeah, well, the pollsters in here in the Tech Talk Radio studio saying I'd say maybe early November for an election. So
I think one of the ways of looking...
After the thing in Sydney.
One of the ways of looking at it is that they want to neutralise the issue. This is one of... If the Howard government knows they're losing on something, they look to neutralise it. David Hicks, for example, might have been a big election issue. Now they've taken it completely off the table. You won't hear anything more about it. And if it comes up, John Howard say, oh, but we saved him and brought him home. But, so they're trying to do the same thing. Now, if it comes up Howard can say, oh, we're doing our consultation process and it won't be finished. So they know that maybe they might be in trouble because Labor's plan got a lot more interest because it looked more like it would actually give us a level playing field. So by announcing this thing that runs past the election, they can say they're doing something without actually having to come up to the goods yet with the goods yet and then say, next question.
Well, we haven't heard any more about the Futures Fund, which is where they were all going to get all this money from anyway, have we?
Oh, yeah, the talk about that was dodgy anyway. I mean, what future have we got without this stuff?
Well, it's only the Polly's superannuation, I would have thought. And let's face it, you know, they don't have the salary package of Sol Trujillo, so what are they worried about? All right, now, another interesting thing which I saw go past before too, and this is probably quite timely for you tonight, Adam. Hackers fake in-car systems for data. Satellite navigation systems can be hijacked remotely with relative ease. That's why... Well, you didn't end up here, I guess.
Well, maybe someone could have hijacked it and told me where to go.
Yes. I don't know why people would want to do this, but it would be very funny if you could sit and see someone turning the wrong direction, I guess. But it allows hackers to feed drivers bogus directions. How does that work in your navigation system?
No, pass.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I don't see... This is just one of those novelty things. Unless there's a way to make money out of it, I don't see it being a big problem. Because what benefit would a hacker have? But in that story, I actually read one interesting thing. The guy that they quoted said you can make it look like there's bad weather or fresh snow or full car parks. Now, full car parks, there's an interesting one. You could do a denial of service attack on a shopping centre by telling everybody that the car park's full, so don't bother coming.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
now
the closest thing I can think of.
Or the opposite. You could completely congest an area. Yeah. You could say, Chedston...
And then you ring up Chedston Management and you say, I want $1 million or I'll do it again.
Yeah.
That's how these things work. That's the only possible way that I can think of to make money out of this. And now if it happens, I'll get the blame.
The hacker tools work on sat-nav in-car radio data system devices, which are predominantly in Europe and becoming increasingly popular in North America. So I don't think there's much to worry too much about here. I thought that might be Bluetooth enabled, so you can sort of like pull up behind them and, you know, hack into it somehow through your laptop on your lap for people to do these sort of things.
Bluejack, the nav man.
Yeah.
It'd be handy for law enforcement agencies. They could say, pull over, driver, and it comes up on their nav. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
The one I was using on the way here had a little Bluetooth symbol on the screen, so I'm guessing it's Bluetooth enabled. I haven't read the instructions yet. I do that last. That's how I test things. I figured if you need to read the instructions, it's maybe a bit too complicated.
But I must admit, those navigation devices have fallen in price dramatically in the last few months. So like what used to be $800 or $900, the equivalents are now down around the $400, $500.
I think this one's about $5, and this is the high-end one. It's a Mio something. But they've got a cheaper one that's about $200 or $300. I can't remember what the difference is.
Mm. And there's a new Nokia out now too, which has got all this navigation and GPS stuff built in too.
That's getting huge press.
Did you talk about it the other week?
I might have mentioned it.
I've seen it on the bus stop. They've got posters all around town.
It's on buses, it's on trains, it's all over town here at the moment. Is that the N93? I'm trying to think of the model.
Maybe
95.
95? Maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be handy. Walking down the street somewhere, it'll tell you where you are, in case you didn't know.
TV, commercials running, all sorts of stuff. They're having a huge push.
I'm doing a story on that this week, actually. I'm going to talk to some people on Friday who do exactly that. They make basically satellite navigation systems for blind people. And it's like, okay, you're walking down the street, the shop that you're looking for is on your left, or that's over there. So rather than being aimed at people in a car, it's aimed at people on foot.
How does that work? Like, is it an audible feed into their ear or something like that? Must be. Or...
Oh, well, yeah, I suppose it would be a spoken word thing. But it's designed because I would assume there would
be a
slightly
fantastic service.
Ways. Yeah, but aiming, targeting at service at a pedestrian, regardless of their ability or disability, would be different to targeting it at a motorist.
Mm.
But most pedestrians probably wouldn't be prepared to pay for it. But if you've got a visual impairment, and you can clearly see the value in it.
Yeah. And it's very accurate these days. Everything comes down to the last almost meter, really. So you know, if you're trying to find shop XYZ, it's quite easy to turn left here, turn right there.
I was impressed with the one on the way here, how close it was telling me to turn the corners in.
Mm. But even the GPS technology is so cheap these days. Like even on eBay, I bought that little device, which I just Bluetooth across to my laptop, load up the appropriate maps of Melways or whatever map I need to see to get around town, and there it is. Easy, done. Real time, very accurate too. All right, and just briefly before we go to our Microsoft story tonight, violent game laws blocked in the United States. Now, what sort of ramifications is this going to have on our country with a U.S. federal judge has called or has ruled a California law to be labelled violent video games and their sale to minors is unconditional, prompting Mr. Arnie Schwarzenegger to say...
Unconstitutional.
Yeah, sorry, is that what I said? Anyway, unconstitutional.
But that's the whole point.
Yeah. So is this going to... happen here? Are we going to sort of see all these violent video games come out? And if
there was a law that
prohibited their sale.
And, it was.
And they've come out and said, or Arnie's come out and said that it's unconstitutional.
Well, no, the courts have come out and said that it goes against the, I think it's the First Amendment right to free speech. Now, we don't
have... To ban video games.
Yeah.
This is from a community with guns.
I guess it's the free speech of the game maker to be able to produce violent games. But we don't have a Bill of Rights here. There is no right to free speech in Australia. People think there is, but there's not.
Mm.
There's an implied right to political free speech. It's, you know, one of those cases sort of found in big trials sort of thing. But generally, we don't have the right to anything, really. So that particular law won't affect Australia, but we still have the problem that we don't have an R ratings for games in Australia.
No, we don't. That's
really
been a case
things
for
up.
A
we
long
have
time.
It for every other medium, but apparently we have to treat games completely differently.
What's the highest rating that we have in Australia for a game?
Oh, what, MA or whatever it is?
M15 plus.
And if it can't get that, then it's banned.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
They've been pushing for have been pushing for years to try and get an R rating for games the same as everything else.
That's all through the IFLC, the Office of Film and Literature Classifications. They just don't have a category for them to put these somewhat... And I don't know why you'd want to buy them. Yeah, they're.
It's actually bad because it means some games sneak through in the 15+, when if there was an 18... If there was an R rating, they would get an R rating.
Mm.
But because they've got to fall one way or the other... Sometimes they fall into the 15 where they really shouldn't be there. So it's actually counterproductive because it's putting games on the shelf that would get an R rating if there was such a thing as an R rating.
Well, it's games that I enjoy playing, like on the PlayStations. If I'm playing Splinter Cell and I'm running around and I'm, you know, breaking necks of, you know, guards and I'm shooting people in the head and doing this sort of stuff, planting wall mines and exploding things, is that going to have an R rating in the U.S. or the equivalent of an R rating in the United States? Or what would that have?
I'm not sure. From the few times that I've heard that these things have made big news, it's when it's more sexual violence and stuff like that.
Right.
People getting raped, prostitutes getting killed, that kind of stuff. It's one of the Grand Theft Auto games, I think. There's a really good story, to bring up Atomic again, it's actually a really good story in Atomic this month about the history of sex in games, which is not the kind of junk you'd read in the mainstream media because it's a gaming technology magazine. It's actually a really good read. But yeah, the Americans are funny. You can kill as many people as you want, but as soon as you see a nipple, all bets are off.
Yeah, isn't that strange? It is. That's very strange.
But that's very you know, typical of their culture. There was a documentary series on the ABC recently talking about computer games and where they've come from and where they've gone to. They talked about first-person shooter games, which I guess is fairly predominant in the United States, almost to the point where the US military use video games. You can go and download this, you know, first-person shooter game, which is a recruitment tool of all things for the US military. And they're looking at doing that here in Australia too, from what I've heard in the mainstream media. And you've got to look at that, you know, and as you say, you know, it's all, you know, kill anyone, shoot anyone, do whatever what you want, which is probably what you don't want to have on, you know, kids' computer games around the place, but yet, you know, we don't have a classification for it or anything. It's very frustrating, isn't it?
I just hope the irony is not lost on Schwarzenegger, who produced some of the great violent movies, or was part of the great movies of the 80s, you know, Commando and all that kind of stuff.
That's true.
Where he dropped people off cliffs. What happened to him?
I let him go.
All that kind of stuff is now going, oh, we have to protect the children from the games. But, you know, my body count from the 80s, you know, was just through the roof.
That's it.
We used to call them awe films. You know, Terminator, and, you know, it's another awe film, you know.
Predator.
Yeah,
exactly.
He made some good. I mean, they were bad good, you know what I mean? They were that junk in the middle of the night you'd stay up and watch good, not like Academy Award winning good.
I think Terminators were quite good, I thought.
They were pretty good. Three was woeful. Two was very good. Two was one of the few sequels that was as good, if not better, than the original. Three just lost it.
True Lies is one of our favourite movies.
Oh, yeah, that's a ripper.
I don't know if I've seen that.
That's very,
that's
very
good. That's with, yes.
It's got the woman in it.
Yeah, and I can't think of her name.
Yeah,
that's why we don't.
Jamie Lee.
Yeah, that's it. Jamie Lee Curtis, yeah. It's absolutely, that was a good one.
Very funny.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio, not the movie show.
Yeah, the movie review night tonight.
We're going to be talking
who's
about...
Who's Siskel and who's Ebert?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, David and Margaret.
That's right, yes. They're good, but you can fight amongst each other like they do. I'll give it five stars, I'll give it none.
I hated this guy.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk technology. We're going to have a look at Microsoft's new Server 2008 offering after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's Charlie. It's child's play. Oh, it's child's play.
Podcasting is so easy. Even my little sister Emily can do it.
Step one, download and install some podcatching software like iPodder, Thunderbird or iTunes. Step two, find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step three, copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software. And you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn on a train.
But that is Charlie Pussy.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Windows Server 2008 is the next generation of server operating system from Microsoft. It is successor to Windows 2003 and was originally known as Windows Server Longhorn until May the 16th in 2007 when Bill Gates announced its official title. Windows Server 2008 is a server operating system containing many of the new client features from Windows Vista, not unlike the relationship between Windows Server 2003 and Windows XP. Beta 1 was released in July of 2005, Beta 2 was announced and released in May 2006, and the final beta, Beta 3, was released publicly in April this year. Today on Tech Talk Radio, we talk to Julius Sinkevicius, the Senior Product Manager of Microsoft Windows Server Division based in the United States. Julius joined the Windows Server Division in 2005 as a Senior Product Manager for Windows Server 2003 and Microsoft Windows Server 2008 product. Julius started working in information technology in 1991 and has held various positions in systems and network administration. In 1998, he joined Microsoft as part of the Microsoft Consulting Services Group and worked with some of Canada's largest companies deploying infrastructure servers. In 2000, he moved to Redmond, Washington and worked in the Microsoft Learning and Tablet PC groups. I was keen to find out about the evolution of Server 2003 to 2008 and how it would make a difference to small business, its target market. Windows Server 2008 is built from the same code base as Windows Vista, therefore it shares much of its same architecture and functionality. So Julius, can you tell us a little bit about what's new in Server 2008?
Well, Windows Server 2008 is a major release for us compared to Windows Server 2003 R2. And as you mentioned, it's based on the same development project that Vista was, known as the codename Longhorn. So it does share a lot of the same features that Vista has from an architecture and technology point of view. But obviously, because it's a server release, there's a lot of new features that are specifically designed for enterprises and businesses and their networks. So, first off, we improve what we call the fundamentals of the operating system. So this is improvements in manageability and reliability of the operating system, allowing people to spend less time on everyday tasks and spending more time on solving complex issues or adding value back to the business. Also making the operating system much more reliable. So reducing the amount of patching and reboots that's required for the operating system. So that's just at the fundamental level. And we also made improvements in adding protection or increased security for the operating system. So we have network access protection. We have protection for data stored on the hard drive with a technology called BitLocker. And also we've made some other enhancements in our directory services. Also, we have a new web server in Windows Server 2008, IIS 7, which is a big enhancement. And we'll be introducing virtualization as part of the operating system with Windows Server 2008. So a lot of changes compared to 2003.
All right, let's put it into perspective for a small business these days. Take, for example, maybe a small to medium-sized business, 5 clients, maybe a roving laptop or two. They want internet access and a print server. What benefits will 2008 bring to them?
Well, there's from different perspectives. So from a management perspective, we've made the management of the server a lot easier. So If you were familiar with 2003, just to get the server up and running and configuring it, you had to go through between 6 and 8 different steps and use different tools just to get the operating system up and running. Now it's very simple, very streamlined. There's one tool called Server Manager, which will allow you to easily bring up the server and configure it. So for a small, medium business, just bringing the operating system up is very simple.
Just talking about compatibility or backward compatibility with clients such as XP and 2000 and even, heaven forbid, 98, how do these operating systems talk to Server 2008?
So from a client perspective or from your desktop connecting to the server, it would work just like any other server, so very similar to 2003. So we don't distinguish between different clients. We still use the same protocols. However, if you're using Windows Vista on the as your client, we made several protocol changes on the networking side and on the file access side, specifically with what we call the SMB, the protocol for accessing files off the server. And this, the new protocol changes will make significant performance changes for end users using Vista talking to a Windows Server 2008 server. And if you have a distributed environment where you might have a branch office or you have mobile users, you'll see that the performance is greatly improved in those kind of disconnected scenarios.
Well, that sounds very exciting, actually. Vista 2000, I bought my first laptop the other day, and you're always a bit apprehensive about moving into the new technology, but so far so good. The one thing that I have noticed is the security, which is out of the box on Vista, is it prompts a lot of questions. Do you really want to do this? Do you really want to run that? Is that the case for the Server 2008 as well? Is that the level of security out of the box?
The server security is different for different parts of the operating system. So by default, Windows Server only installs what you need to be installed. So when you install the operating system, basically until you configure it or tell it to install features like IIS or network access protection, it'll only install those features. So by default, it's a secure system. It's locked down. We reduce the surface attack area. But where we've made improvements on for your entire environment is with network access protection. So this is a new feature in Windows Server 2008 where we will allow you to provide additional security for your environment. So as clients such as Vista or previous versions of Windows like XP, when they join the network or try to connect to the network, before they get access to any resources, we'll do a scan of the system health of that client and determine whether that client has the right levels of, you know, antivirus software, anti-spyware, latest security patches, and so on. And then once we've determined that that client has a valid health policy, then we'll allow it to join the network. So we're providing security at many different levels within the operating system. So is it secure out of the box? Absolutely. Security is a little bit different because it is on the server side, but it provides security not just for the operating system, but also for data and for people accessing the network.
So is this what you're calling the new network access protection, one of the features in 2008?
Yes. So it's enabled with 2008, and Windows Vista has the client software already built into it because it does require some client components. But network access protection is one of our key features in Windows Server 2008. And really, we see this being used by all types of different customers because it does provide, you know, additional value or protection for your network. So what was happening before, and how this feature kind of came about, is, a client or a user would be able to, traveling with their laptop, they would maybe pick up a virus, they'd go back to their network, their business, and kind of pollute the network with that virus. Then the administrator would scan the network, secure everything, and then again, someone else would go out, pick up a virus, and bring it back to the company. So what we're trying to do is to make sure that before anyone can connect to the network, that they have it's a clean machine. And if it isn't clean, it has a virus or something, or doesn't meet the security policy, then we have a way of rectifying that, either by upgrading that client to the right level of security, or restricting that client from having access to the network whatsoever.
So let's have a look at IIS 7, which is the built-in web server, which comes with, well, whether it's IIS 6 was in R2 of 2003, and we're moving on to IIS 7. Is there anything new and exciting that's going to get everyone going for the new version of IIS?
Yeah, there's a lot of new things. So IIS 6, which a lot of people don't realize, but, you know, we released that in April 2003, and, you know, over the 4 years we've had it out on the market, we've had zero critical security vulnerabilities. So it's been a great product for us. With IIS 7, we take that even further. So it's more componentized. So IIS 6 had 7 different configuration options that were up to over 40 with IIS 7. So that means you only install what you need. Because you only install the components that you want, you only need to patch what you need. So it becomes easier to manage. We also have the ability to delegate administration. So if you have a web server environment, you don't have to give full administrative rights to the application developer or to the administrator. You can delegate who's going to administer which part of the web server. We also have support for things like PHP, which is very exciting for a lot of developers. IIS 7, we also announced a couple weeks ago, will now be supported as a role on Server Core. And Server Core, if you're not familiar with, is an installation option for Windows Server to have a smaller footprint server with fewer services running on it. And IIS 7 will now run as a Server Core role.
Okay, and terminal services, what are the major changes to that?
So there's two new enhancements. One's called the remote app, and the other one is the terminal services gateway. So what remote app allows you to do is to publish an application through terminal services, and so when the end user launches that application, they don't get the remote desktop. What they'll get is just that application. So for example, Visio is a common example that we use at Microsoft, because I don't necessarily use Visio all the time, but if someone sends me a Visio document, I want to be able to open up that document. So I can hit a terminal server, and Visio will come up on my desktop. Even though it's running off that server, it looks like and acts like it's running on my desktop. It supports drag and drop, interact with the system tray, and so on. So that's a great solution for applications. Common scenario is a company wants to roll out a brand new application overnight to all their users. Instead of physically installing the application on every single desktop, they could just roll out remote app, and then everyone can get access to the application running on terminal server. So that's one enhancement. The other enhancement is through the terminal services gateway, and I kind of touched upon this earlier. And what we're allowing you to do is to allow your users to have a terminal services session just using HTTPS or SSL to get access to it. So you don't need a VPN anymore. So I could be, as long as I have an internet connection, whether it's at home or my hotel room, at a coffee shop or a cafe or somewhere, I have my laptop, I'm able to establish an internet connection. I can use go back, tunnel through to my corporate terminal server and then run an application or run a email session or so on. So this is a great solution for people who travel a lot and don't need to go back to their office and don't want to set up a VPN connection.
And Microsoft is boasting these new technologies, which you've mentioned earlier on, like Server Core and PowerShell. Can you briefly tell us a little bit about what they are and how they work in 2008?
Sure. So first I'll talk about Server Core. So Server Core is an installation option. So when you install, whether it's standard or enterprise or data center edition or web server, you have an option to install Server Core. And so what Server Core will do is it will install the base operating system files that you need, such as the kernel, networking services, and so on. And then it will install the role that you want, so if you want to be a file server or a DNS server and so on. And that's it. And so it's basically the core operating system. But what it doesn't have like Windows Explorer or Internet Explorer or media players. In fact, there's no graphical user interface whatsoever. So when you boot it up, it comes up like a very similar to what DOS used to look like.
It's a command line system, is it? Yeah.
The command line.
Yep.
And everything is managed by command line. Or you can manage it remotely by using command line or MMC snap environment, Microsoft Management Console tools to manage that remote server. So because it is a minimal installation of the operating system, it does require less patching. In our estimation is that if we had done this for Windows Server 2003, we would have been able to eliminate about 60% of the patches for those specific roles that run on the server core. Now, server core doesn't support all the roles. So, for example, SharePoint services. SharePoint requires the .NET framework to be present, and so there is no .NET framework on server core, so you can't run SharePoint. But you can run, you know, file, print, DNS, DCP. I mentioned IIS, also Windows Media Services, and some other key roles. So that's the server installation. Now, PowerShell, on the other hand, is a new scripting and environment and language that allows you to create and execute fairly complex scripts so you can start automating different parts of managing your servers. So it's based on the .NET framework, so it is very powerful. It leverages your existing scripts and batch files you have, but also has a new set of commands that you can do things like, you know, create user accounts and make settings on the server and so on. So it becomes a very easy way to automate a lot of things that people used to do manually. And that's kind of our goal with Windows Server 2008, is to really allow you to spend less time on managing everyday things and reducing the complexity of the server. So as a business, you can focus more on things that add value back to the business.
All right, and finally, Julius, I'd like to talk about migration from 2003 to 2008. What's the recommended path if an IT or company wants to move into the new realms of 2008? Is it a how would you recommend them go about it?
So it depends on the roles of the, or the function, main function of the server that you want to migrate. So, for example, if it's just a the target server you want to migrate is a what we call like a core infrastructure server. So if it's a DNS server or DHCP server or Active Directory server, those are pretty straightforward and allows us, and we can do we can do like an in-place migration for those. Now, for other types of servers where you're running applications, those are more complex. So for example, if you have an application that's a billing system and so on, we wouldn't recommend necessarily to do a in-place migration to Windows Server 2008. It just requires a lot more investigation and testing. So one of the items we're encouraging right now with our customers is that we've reached a beta 3 milestone a few months ago, and customers should be going out and getting beta 3 and start trialing it in their environment to see how beta 3 will work in their environment and what kind of changes that they need to make in order to move to 2008.
Windows Server 2008 is scheduled for official release on February 27 next year. You can hear the full half-hour conversation I had with Julius, which goes into a little bit more technical detail, on our website at techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio, and thank you once again to Microsoft for having a bit of a chat to us there. There's a few more Microsoft interviews coming up fairly shortly. We're going to be talking to, well, Dr. Ron actually is going to be talking to Oscar about
Oscar Trimboli, talking to him about Unified Communications Server.
Yep. What does that mean? What's Unified Communications?
I'm glad you asked. Unified Communications is a way of managing your incoming calls and outgoing calls in an organisation. So if you ring me at my desk, and I'm not there, maybe I've got an appointment in my calendar which says I'm out of the office.
Yeah.
Then the system will intelligently route the call through to my mobile phone. You won't even know where I am. You don't need to know where I am. It just it's like a find me yeah. service.
Or it'll look at your calendar and say, I'm sorry, Dr. Ron's in a meeting right now.
That's right. And send the message through to voicemail. And there's also unified messaging system as well.
I've always been sceptical about these sort of processes because they're only as good as the information that you put into your diary.
Well, they are only as good as the information that you put in, but if you keep it accurate and up to date, then it gives people who are calling you a better chance of...
The only people I know that keep those things accurate and up to date are accountants.
Yeah, you just have to threaten your employees with everything under the sun if they don't use it properly.
Otherwise, what's the point? You invest these thousands of... Anyway, it'll be interesting to have a bit of a listen and see what...
find out what they're doing with it.
See what happens, because it's been a very interesting issue over the course of time. NextG, you know that thing? Telstra is claiming more than 1 million subscribers for its NextG network, part of an overall 3G user base forum of more than 2 million for the company. That's not bad. 3G moving out...
That's a bit more than 2 million on 3G-based systems, and 1 million of those are on NextG.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try and play my way through on NextG again very shortly as well. But HSDPA, it's been good. Do you use it? You don't?
No. Really? I use a competitor's HSDPA network. I don't use the NextG one.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing. That competitor, which I assume you're talking about, is 3.
It is.
Yeah, they're doing a very aggressive campaign. And this is, unfortunately, if you're listening to us in the country, it's not really an option because this is the joys of what they call cherry picking, where 3 is really a city-centric thing in all of major capital cities. But what costs you $29 on 3 costs you $109 on Telstra. And there's other providers which are all similar, sort of in that sliding scale there. And then there's Optus. I was looking on their website the other day trying to find out what they're charging. They have this thing called Zoo where you can see the A to Z of animals, you know, talking to you, but that's basically it. You try and find a price and a product.
If you want to see a picture of a giraffe talking to a wildebeest, then go to the
right
zoo.
Place.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, if you want a competitive data network.
I'm really over the yes and the animals. Why don't they try something else?
That's it. If you're actually wanting to compare data plans for what's currently on offer in Australia on mobile phone networks, have a look at the Tech Talk Radio website. Andrew has got a superlative graph up there. With all different plans, haven't you?
And it links through to the appropriate... It saves you doing the... Where on earth is the price on the telephone company's website?
It compares apples with apples, doesn't it?
Which is pretty hard to do.
There's a bit of confusion, too, with Hutchison's thing, too, where they have this X Series thing and then they have their normal 3 handsets. Don't confuse the two. I think X Series is an add-on to an approved handset, which can handle the new high-speed data. Whereas your average phone that you go out and buy these days, it may not necessarily support the high-speed packet access, which is what HSDPA is all about. So just buyer beware there, but geez, anyway. And look for your blue tick, too, by the way, if you're in rural areas of Australia. Telstra have initiated a great new service where the network's up to scratch. That's why Mark's not here tonight, actually. He's out doing some tests somewhere in far north Queensland to make sure that CDMA and HSDPA, the new NextG network, is actually performing well. I know he's said in the course of time that the network is technically up to spec. It's the handsets which is letting things down, and that's why they're coming out with these new blue ticks on handsets.
So for our rural listeners, the blue tick means that it's... Please explain.
Well, the blue tick means it's suitable for use in rural or marginal areas.
You can run a tractor over it.
That's the thing, because the farmers don't want us, our city slicker phones, because they just don't handle the chaff in the cow, you know,
they don't being
feeding corral thing.
Dropped in the mud and all the...
That's right.
All the hard yak that they're going to get.
And have you ever driven, you know, you've been in the car wash and your car antenna's down, and you think, oh, I'm going to stick my hand out of the window and pull my antenna up so you can hear the local radio station. What happens when you put your hand on the antenna?
I can't say I've ever done that.
Have you?
Well, maybe you've I've like got one on the roof above me. But
one of these people that listens to an iPod in a thunderstorm, aren't
you? No.
Flies a kite. And
you have to put your little antenna down, otherwise it gets zinged off in the brushy thing that goes across the top of your car.
Yeah.
If you put your hand on it when you go to pull it out of the little thing to extend your antenna again, you hear nothing. And that's what you do on your mobile phone. You're actually holding your antenna in your car. So your reception is about as good as,
Maybe you're better off with a hands-free thing and the phone on your hip.
Well, yes, yeah, potentially, but the thing is you don't want to be holding the phone because it just attenuates the signal, and that's the biggest issue that they're finding at the moment, because all the new yuppie city slicker phones, like we've all got on our benches here, they don't have antennas, do they? But no, the ones with the blue ticks on them out there should have, I would hope, extendable antennas, if not something that can plug into a car kit, because that's what you need.
Getting rid of those antennas has really improved the comfort factor, though, when you stick a phone in your pocket.
Yeah, well, that's good for our city slickers, but try out in the bush. Mm. That's the thing, isn't it? All right, so well done, Next G. You're getting a few customers. Despite the download fees, I think that's a sterling effort. All right, let's talk about Xboxes, because we can. Microsoft will cut the price of its main Xbox 360 video game console model by about 13% in the US, hoping to boost sales ahead of the crucial Christmas season. Is Xbox falling off, you boys? Or is it going to be big?
Microsoft are in damage control at the moment with their games console
business. They've got a huge issue with returns at the moment.
Massive issue. They've actually extended the warranty.
What happens when the red light flashes on the front of it?
It's the red ring of death.
Yeah. Is that what they call it?
I think so, yeah. And after that, basically, you own a brick.
So basically, they're saying they can't give them away now. They're dropping prices going out of fashion.
Why do they bother, though? I mean, we were having this conversation before off air. Why bother try and bring out something compete with an iPod? Why bother try and bring out something with a PlayStation? Microsoft, the only things they make money off are Office and Windows. Everything else is a money loser for them. Mm. They've never made any money on games consoles and
stuff
like that.
Waiting for their mobile. When are they coming out with the...
I don't know.
It'll be the next thing.
Yeah. The Z phone.
There's someone who just comes up with crazy schemes. Here's another way we can... It's like Brewster's Millions. Remember Brewster's Millions, and he had to spend all that money and not tell anyone why he was trying to give it all away? It's like Microsoft do the same thing. Let's find another market to break into and get slaughtered and lose all this money. Yeah. I don't know whether... And now they're talking about an Xbox Portable, apparently.
Yeah?
Just another thing for Microsoft to be second at.
Mm.
Well, actually, no, not even second.
it's a pretty firmly established market. Like, if you look at like what Sony's done with the PlayStation over all these years, as you say, we were saying in the break, there's a thing called an iPod, which they may or may not have heard, they thought they'd bring out the Zune and...
But you would have said the same thing about Sony. When they came out with the PlayStation, it's like, why are they even bother trying to compete with Sega and Nintendo or whatever?
Mm.
And Sony just slaughtered them. Now, I don't know exactly what they did right. I would assume that they came up with a good console, and they probably spent a fortune to get all the right games developed on the platform.
Sony sort of aren't notoriously, marketeering. Look what happened with the VHS and Vita, but yet they've done it fairly well with their game console.
Oh, they learn after that. Sony don't like to lose. I think they still feel the sting from Betamax, and they don't like to lose now.
But take a look at their Walkman range of things too. You know, what happened to the Walkman? That was revolutionary in its time.
The iPod is the new Walkman. Yeah, the Walkman, and Sony were very late on that stuff, and then when they brought it out, it was so riddled with DRM that it was unusable. I mean, iPods have got DRM, and it's annoying, but at least it's friendly DRM. It works. It's not hard to use an iPod if you're prepared to put up with the restrictions.
Speaking of DRM, finish your sentence. I won't jump in, but yes. All right, I have now. The largest music recording company in the world, Universal Music Group, is going to trial sales of its music in a DRM-free MP3 format, but notably, Apple's iTunes won't be part of the deal.
This was also in the news. This was a huge snub towards Apple on the part of the Universal Music Group.
Because they've teamed up with others? Is this a rivalry between record companies we're seeing here?
Well, they've got tracks for sale on iTunes, and they've also got tracks for sale on iTunes competitors, and they're going to be selling them for the same price. I think off the top of my head it was something like 99 cents US, and they were going to offer the same tracks DRM free on the iTunes competitors.
I think the problem is that Steve Jobs likes to come across as, Apple are the savior and Apple are the good guys, saving you from the big bad record companies. And they may be being sick of painted as the bad guy, and they may not want to play anymore. And they may have just looked at themselves and go, you know what, we're pretty big, actually, being Universal. We maybe don't need to kowtow to you guys as much.
Mm.
And so I think they're just trying to show Apple that you're not the be-all and end-all.
Sony Music have been fairly quiet on the DRM scene, too. They're a fairly sizable record company. I wonder where their loyalties are going to lie.
One word, rootkit. If I was Sony, I'd never talk about DRM again after what they did. For people who don't know what I'm talking about, they put software on their computer that's basically hacker tools, and they use this software to hide the fact that they'd installed their software. It's like a cloaking device. They could create a little corner of your hard drive, and you couldn't tell that something had been installed there. And so Sony put their DRM software. But the thing is, hackers could then come along and hide their software in the same spot. And Sony went, oh, sorry, and had to pull all these CDs off the market. And they've got a history of putting stuff on their CDs that you don't know about. And
things in there to stop you ripping them and all this kind of stuff. They're Sony and DRM, it's not a good thing.
Mm. I remember some of the antivirus programs picking it up and saying, oh, this is malicious software installed by Sony Corporation.
He couldn't find out how this cloaking thing got on his computer, and then he realised, oh, I put a Sony CD in there and installed it without telling him.
Well, the Sony Walkman brand you still see on things like mini discs and also on the telephone, the Sony Ericsson telephone.
Well, they went into cahoots with Ericsson, didn't they?
That's right, they're being badged up as Walkman phones and things like that.
Well, they're actually turning them around to sell them as, rather than a telephone, they're actually being sold as a multimedia device, and, oh, by the way, we put a phone in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I
sounds
think
that's... familiar.
That's where they're heading. Just before we go to the break too, there's a new batch of SP1, Service Pack 1's coming out for Windows Vista and for Windows XP too, so that's going to be interesting too for people that watch their downloads. There'll probably be a couple of hundred meg heading your way
and
fairly shortly.
All those people who have sworn not to touch an operating system until the first Service Pack comes out.
Yeah, listen up. It's time for you.
Except Microsoft are probably bringing it forward now because they know that. So they would release one patch, call it Service Pack 1, and then go, look, we've released Service Pack 1. It's safe to go to Vista. So you don't know. I've got my cynical hat on. It's getting very crowded in this room with all these hats.
Lots of hats.
It is. Look, yes, cynicism is good, I think. You need to have a look at these sort of things. But, the Service Pack for XP, what'll that be? Service Pack 3. Because they've only had... how long? That's pretty good for Microsoft when you think about it. They've had a lot of hot fixes and a lot of issues in the course of time. Patch Tuesdays, I think, counted for a lot of bandwidth at my place in the downloads of what they do. SP3, I don't know what new and improved versions that they're going to have for those, but that'll be coming up fairly shortly. So watch this space. The DRM stuff, though, I'll just touch base on that. That's sort of been the bone of contention. What is it? 10% of music... which is available online, was all DRM'd, and the rest of it was what you bought at the record shop and things like that, which was the other 90%, I'm assuming. But it's sort of come full circle now, hasn't it? And we're going to see this with video, don't you think, with all the...
Eventually.
Some form of rights management with these ICE TV thingies, and they said, oh, no, you can't record the grand final. And
well, one of the stories was that the reason why those LG tuners were playing up is because Nime were embedding something in the signal to stop people recording us stuff.
Good conspiracy theory. Go on.
but if the video people had any brains at all, they should have seen all this coming. When someone first ripped a music file and put it up on the web, the video people should have gone, you know what? When bandwidth gets cheaper and speeds get faster and computers get more powerful, that'll be us. We better prepare for it. But they don't learn. And all this stuff we're going through with iTunes and DR and whatever, the video people, a lot of them don't seem to have learned, and they're going to make the same mistakes.
They're still set very much in a 1950s, 1960s commercial television mindset. Oh, it's all right, we'll have TV commercials and people will watch them and that's how we'll make our money, but they need to move with the times. That's not how it's going to be forever.
Anything you see on television that's not made in Australia, you can download off the internet.
I wonder if the Packers saw this coming. I wonder if that's why they've got out of Nine and they've headed down to the where you can make money in gambling.
Jamie and Kerry had very different interests. Like, Kerry... Fairfax was the great white whale for Kerry Packer. He had to own Fairfax, and there was a few other things. Jamie's more interested in casinos and the internet and stuff like that. He's got sort of different pictures, and now that Kerry's not in the picture, he's taking them in a different direction, and that's why they sold off the lion's share of PBL, I think it was. The Packer family don't even control it anymore.
Mm.
Because
Kerry
turned
in his grave.
Well, yeah, but Jamie knows that's not where he wants to be, that there's money to be made elsewhere. Which is probably good for them, because if he had have gone, every generation's got to change, and if he was still trying to be a copy of his dad, that'd be bad news for them. They're lucky to have someone in charge who's looking forward to what's coming next rather than trying to stick with what we've had. It sounds like government.
It does a bit. Hey, I see you've brought your crystal ball in this evening. Where do you reckon we'll be television, free-to-air television-wise, in, say, 5 years' time? That's a long time for free-to-air television.
Well, see... Me being a nerd, I like to think everyone's going to do what I do. Everyone's going to download TV. Everyone's going to have hard drive recorders, and the networks will be forced to change. And then you go around to your parents' house or someone else's house, and they've still got their VCR, and they don't know what on earth you're talking about. And you've got to remind yourself, these things don't change that quickly. In 5 years, things will not look as different as we would like them to, but what you'll find is just continuing trends, putting more ads over the top of TV shows. I hate that. But they do it because they know you're not going to fast forward the ad that's being superimposed on the top of the show, are you?
That's right. They have like a banner down the bottom of the screen for 30 seconds here and there, or coming up after, or next, or don't miss this on Wednesday night at 8:30.
And the cricket commentators do it. They have to read the ads during the commentary.
Yeah.
And the first time, I think it was Tony Gregg had to do one, you could just hear the sound in his voice, like, I need a shower after this. He just felt so dirty. It's now part of what they do. They're just finding ways around it.
I love fast-forwarding through the ads.
I know, you don't fast-forward them, you skip them. I've got a media centre, mate.
That's what you do.
It goes forward 30 seconds at a time,
yep.
And then if you go just in, the back button goes back 10 seconds.
That's
so
great.
So you just find the thing, and so you see one frame of every ad.
I grab my little Seek bar in the bottom of the media page, drag a little bit. Oh, there you go. Finish the ads. That's great.
All right. We could talk about this for hours, but we can't.
We're troublemakers that we are.
A few more moments to go, and we'll be back with the rest of the show after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of a hole!
How many times have you grabbed your favourite MP3 player and jumped in the car and wanted to listen to some music, or even mowed the lawns and stuff like that, and you think, oh, wouldn't it be great if I could actually get the signal off my...
the battery?
Do you have that problem, do you?
I really
do. Speaking of that, how's your mini disc tonight? Are we going
to
get the whole...
to the device, yeah. No, it's all good.
You jump into your car. This is a new little MP3 player come FM transmitter built into one. So what you do is you whack it into the side of your machine, transfer your songs across the MP3 player, and then you can just chuck it in the car seat and hit play and tune in on your radio.
See, I don't know why this hasn't been thought of before, because there's two components that I have in my car. I've got the actual MP3 player, and I've got one of those little Belkin FM transmitters. Yeah,
but there's two things, and there's cables that dangle,
and cables, and it's you've got,
and you hit the brakes, and it goes underneath your feet, and it ties your legs around. Well,
I'd rather have them separately, because then I can buy the best MP3 player, the MP3 player of my choice, and connect it, rather than buy this, you know, maybe dodgy MP3 player just because it's got an FM transmitter in it.
But you've found one, though, have you?
I have, but see, not everyone's like you. Are they? Really?
Yeah. Which is probably
saying,
a good thing.
We were just saying that in the break. Not everyone wants to be a nerd like Adam. But this is just convenience. Like this would pass the wife test. You were also speaking about this earlier on in the evening. And that is the fact that they can take their music with them. They can hit play. They can download it off wherever they want to get it from. Take it in the hit play, tune it into their FM radio, and away they go.
The wife acceptability factor.
Which is a critical...
The WAF.
It is.
It's critical in the you know, desire to purchase something, isn't it? Can my wife use it?
So who makes this one?
I have no idea. I knew you'd ask me that. This is a... there's no brand on it, but it is available for about £30 at the moment, which is around about 70 or 80 bucks Australian, which is not bad. We'll probably see them on the market here, so it's very ordinary that they don't actually tell us who actually makes this little sucker. But nonetheless, it's coming. The technology that you would expect to see in a wireless FM device is not far away. So that's the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Andrew, Adam, got scratches on your favourite CDs and DVDs?
Your fingerprints.
I rip them and then put them in the cupboard. I only use them.
You can't say that. But that's exactly what I do with my kids, and they treat them as coasters and frisbees in the front room, and so they last a week, and then you have to do another burn. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing. I found a blog, which is at dubs.wisebread.com/ quickly removing scratches from CDs and DVDs, and we'll put that link on the
forum.
How
does it work?
Well, this blog is a collection of videos, and this guy's got the best ways that he's found to remove minor scratches
and bumps. Get out of the car polish and wax it up.
From your CDs. Yeah, he's got car polish, he's got wax, he's got Brasso, which Brasso is a brand of metal cleaner. I don't know what you call it apart from Brasso.
Hydrochloric acid or something.
Yeah. He says here, I used to look in wonder and amazement at some of my CDs and DVDs. How could they get in such a state? He must have kids too. He has. He definitely has. He's gone surfing, found a good collection of videos showing the best ways to remove minor scratches and bumps from CDs and DVDs. So check that out, wisebread.com. Quickly removing scratches from CDs and DVDs.
Have you ever been to the video library and you go to the kids section? You think, oh my goodness, I hope these are going to play when you get them home. Otherwise, there's a lot of disappointment on certain little girls' faces.
Try getting Bob the Builder from the library.
Someone was telling me not play. Yeah, exactly. Someone was telling me the other day they've got this little abrasive cleaner up there which takes a layer of.
Well, on this blog it says you can use Brasso, you can use chewing gum, you can use toothpaste, and you can use banana.
Banana?
And all these things. He's got videos of all these things and how it will clean up your precious discs.
Fine if they don't belong to you. I'll try it on the library
You can't get a video library one first. Exactly. I think that's the way to go.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Oddspot on Tech Talk Radio.
British secondary students will be able to study the historical development of computer games in place of traditional history. Year 12 students will be able to take diverse diploma courses as part of Prime Minister Gordon Brown's plan to encourage future university studies.
Must be a gamer.
The Advanced Media Studies Diploma will require students to, quote, critically respond to a range of computer games, quote, and discuss why enthusiasts like playing them. The qualifications will be part of a range of new diplomas which pupils will be able to study instead of more traditional subjects.
Like science and humanities.
Yeah, important things like that. You'll study computer games instead.
Get yourself a degree in Leisure Suit Larry.
That's what I need.
Did you say degree?
in his Land of the Lounge Lizards. Yeah. How good was that?
Yeah
so that's probably exactly what it's aimed at, Adam. Yeah. Traditional history of computer games. Leisure Suit Larry.
Yeah.
All the text adventures.
StarCraft.
Yeah.
Zork.
Oh, StarCraft.
Xenos.
Rules, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, StarCraft. Yeah. All the Warcraft, StarCraft type games.
Yeah. What about, what's the other one, the big one?
What about Wolfenstein and Doom?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they were all those for...
Return of Castle Wolfenstein.
Return was a good one.
We should do a show on games, shouldn't we? Right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's been wonderful having Adam Turner. He got off the couch and came into the studio, so it's really been view from the studio tonight. Thank you very much, Adam, for coming in.
Pleasure to be here.
Wonderful.
Glad that the doctor was in the house this time.
Yeah, no, he does abscond from time to time.
Had a pretty good run lately, though.
You have. You next week?
No idea.
That's 7 days away.
What you know in 6.5 days' time.
Yeah. Oh, dear, nothing's changed, has it? All right, listening to Tech Talk. You have been listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Adam Turner, and myself, Andrew McComb. Don't forget feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. We like hearing from you guys. Or pick the phone up and ring 1-300-664-882 and leave a message, and we'll get them to air and all that sort of stuff. So until next week, it's bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.